This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm pleased to have Todd Olson with us, CEO and co-founder at Pendo, a company that I know for a while and I highly regard. So it's a pleasure to be with you, Todd. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Fantastic. Would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself, and even Pendo is a well-known company, a little bit about the company as well for the audience?
Yeah, sure. So as you said, I'm Todd Olson. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Pendo. Pendo is my third venture-funded startup. So you could say I'm, you know, a serial entrepreneur, although Pendo has been the most successful of those three ventures. I do come from sort of a technology background. So I haven't been, you know, CEO of a business. I've been in CTO roles, chief product officer roles. So I come from sort of the technology product side of the house, I would say. So I, even at Pendo, I helped code the first version of the product, and haven't coded a lot since the first version of the product. It's been probably about, you know, 10 years since I've done that. But I do, you know, fashion myself as a recovering engineer. What's Pendo? So Pendo, as I said, 11-year-old software company. Our vision is really all around improving the world's experiences with software. And if you think about how software powers our customer experiences, or even our employee experience, when I sit, you know, I sit down at my work, I open up my computer, I use a bunch of software. Pendo's platform helps measure all of the interactions, how people use them, where they get stuck, and provide solutions to increase drive adoption and engagement. So very often when you're using software, you may just not even know how to take full advantage or get full value out of it. And Pendo's platform is intended to help all of our customers maximize the value out of the software investments that they're making.
Fantastic. One of the topics that in our previous discussion, we discussed about it was the importance and the impact of digital workers. And how do you define digital workers? How do you see, you know, it can play out in the future of software and applications?
Yeah, well, I think, well, I mean, obviously this is like one of the most interesting and I think important trends that we're seeing really in the world right now. And of course, it's a technology, it's an overarching technology trend, but it's certainly very, very important. And I think, you know, a synonym, so to speak, for a digital worker would be an agent. I sort of use, I think you can sort of, I believe, generally use these terms interchangeably. But if you look at what, I mean, look, it goes back to the launch of GPT, ChatGPT, and the world started to get exposed by what was possible through large language models and artificial intelligence. Fast forward to today, we've just seen a tremendous amount of innovation leveraging this technology, because this technology provides a sort of foundation that you can deliver a lot of innovation ahead. So what we're seeing is a number of companies looking across various jobs, various use cases across their business, and starting to think like, hey, how can I offload that work from my staff, my employees, and leverage as a digital worker to do this work on behalf of our team? And you can almost think of it as hiring a digital worker. And we're starting to see these digital workers pop up across our company. So a great example would be if you go to www.pendo.io, it's our website, you're greeted by Penny. Penny is our digital worker who is an AI SDR. She's an inbound SDR. She's having a conversation with you. She knows a lot about our product, a lot about our company, and she can help direct you to sort of the next best action that helps, you know, resolve your inquiry, or hopefully, you know, if you're looking at Pendo or evaluating us, hopefully we'll get you into looking at our products and evaluating it. But that is her job. And look, you know, what's the alternative? Yeah, obviously you can call, you can talk to a human. We still do employ humans. Penny can offload a decent amount of that work. And that's a great example of how we see a digital worker. And that's just one role within Pendo. But I think what we're going to see is that we're going to see a lot of these digital workers pop up. And I think what's exciting about it is it makes all the people we have far more productive. And if you think about the future of our workforces, each and every person can think about being managers of digital workers. They can have an army of digital workers that are working on their behalf. And whereas you're scaling businesses, we've scaled Pendo, like we have plenty of people that come to me and say, hey, Todd, I want to be a manager. And sometimes there isn't enough headcount growth to make everyone a manager. Great thing about digital is that everyone can become a manager of digital workers, and that they can all be part of how you, like, you know, again, drive an outcome more productively. So I think that to me is what's exciting about this whole revolution.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, and fascinating topic. Now, think about this idea that you just mentioned, that people have the option to talk to an AI agent or digital worker or digital sales guy or digital, you know, SDR, versus they can click the button and talk to a human if they wanted to ask about pricing, if they have some other questions about your product or whatever. They have the option. So they go to the website, you put the one button on the left side and you say, click here, AI agent works with you. Click on the right side, a human will be in touch with you. And when do you think that would be the time that majority of people would go and just say, of course, I will click on AI agent? I think today, if you put that button there, it's still people would trust the human to provide them a better help than the AI agent. But I don't know how long does it take for them to click on the left button and say, of course, AI agent, that's much faster, better. I can definitely get better information from them and help.
Yeah, look, I think right now we're certainly not at a place where you're going to 100% in either direction. I completely agree with you. You know, I think there are times that I want to talk to a human, you know, and I think it is a way that certain brands, certain companies differentiate themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, for years we've had, you know, hotels where, I don't know if you've been to hotels like a Citizen M. There's one in London where I go to. Very humanless experience. But you could also go to a St. Regis, which is a very heaven human experience. Now, sometimes I'm traveling in business and I'm arriving at 1 a.m. off of a long flight. I don't want to wait for a human to come from behind, because I just want to get in, get to bed, and like get up the next day and go to work. But sometimes I'm with my family or my spouse and I'm enjoying a nice vacation. Maybe I want to like have a human maybe think of the things that I'm not thinking about and suggesting them to me so I have a better, more elevated experience. I think both are true. I think both are true when people come to your website. You know, look, if I'm on my couch at 9 p.m. playing around with solutions and I'm like doing some researching, I'm kind of in the flow. I want to like explore. I obviously don't want to talk to a human. It's not, you know, it's 8 or 9 p.m. on my couch. I'm kind of maybe drinking a glass of wine. I want to do research. The AI agent's going to be great for that use case. But in the middle of my day, and I'm having an issue with a company, damn straight I want to get on the phone and get an answer. Like, I'm not, some agent's going to try to like have some like, no, I mean, I'm going to have my thresholds are low. I want speed. I want resolution. I want a human who's, sometimes you don't like this, like I want a neck I can ring if something's going wrong. There is no neck in AI. No, I'm not written anything, right? So think about those two use cases. One, I think you're going to want a human for a while, potentially. For a while, I think. Mm-hmm. Something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. You want to hold someone accountable. Someone, not a machine accountable.
Yeah.
So, I think that reality is at least going to be a reality for a while in business. So certainly, and even our personal lives, I fully believe that. So.
Yeah. No, that's makes perfect sense. And these kind of some of the users are going to be digital workers. Some of the users are going to be AI agents. That's one topic. The other topic is about, do they need as many applications and SaaS applications that humans need? Or does it change the type of applications? Maybe in the future, we see some applications just created for AI agents. Maybe the current applications need to be improved upon to provide the better user experience, not just to humans, but also to AI agents. Now, you guys being on the forefront of this kind of, you know, understanding the applications and helping companies to optimize their products for the kind of experience that they offer to their users, what's your take on it, the way you see it, that probably, you know, is going to happen in the next some years?
Look, I'm a tech optimist, so I will caveat all my expressions with tech optimism, but I think there's going to be fewer SaaS applications? I think there's going to be more agentic applications. Mm-hmm. And I think it is incumbent on a lot of the SaaS applications to transform themselves into being agentic applications. I think people are going to want agentic applications. There's no question about it. However, I think the SaaS applications that are in market, many of whom have tremendous business context about their customers, are the best positioned ones to deliver the best quality products. I think the best quality agents, the best quality digital workers. But it is incumbent on them to change and move. Like, if they sit still and wait, don't think it's a trend, and just sort of pretend that the world has not changed, they will be left behind 100%. And those applications will go away. But the SaaS apps that recognize this change and make a shift, I think we're going to do well. And this is a classic innovator dilemmas problem. Like, we've all read the book. Hopefully everyone's read the book. Great book recommendation, Innovator's Dilemma. If you have not read it, Clayton Christian, it's like one of the best books written about tech ever. Classic problem. It's a classic problem. Because what most of these companies will say is, we got a lot of customers. We got a lot of revenue. We're going to protect it. If we stop investing in our existing product, we're going to lose all our revenue. Mm-hmm. Turns out if you don't invest in the future, you're not going to have any future revenue. So no, I think that is what this problem is, innovator's dilemma problem. And I think each company, each market is going to be a little nuanced in terms of the timing. Mm-hmm. Some markets you'll have to move faster. Some you can move a little slower. But everyone's going to have to move. And I fully believe that. And it really turns into, like, you know, if you look at a lot of SaaS applications today, a lot of the more successful ones that we would probably describe as vertically oriented SaaS applications. So we then go vertical by verticals, which verticals are being more disrupted by agents today. And if you're not in that mix, like, that is a challenge. That is a problem. Right. And I think, like, there's always going to be some verticals that are laggards. So I think those, you know, obviously those vendors will have a little more time, but not infinite time. No one will. Like, this is the way the world's moving, clearly. And look, what percent, like, so let's now think about the user. I come into an application, there's a traditional SaaS application, there's a sort of agentic solution. And when I say agent, I mean, yes, you could have fully autonomous agents, but what we're seeing more of is more sort of human in the loop, you know. Yeah. Directed agentic work. So let's say it's that, not quite autonomous yet. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to have UIs with both. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was talking to a chief product officer the other day of a SaaS application, very well known, will not mention the name, of course, but the way he characterized it is their agentic vision's awesome. They delivered three agents. There's some good uptake on it. But what he said is, I mean, what we're seeing is that the agents are being adopted by their more novice users, kind of the user that come in the app and they don't quite know how to use it. They use the agents to kind of do mm-hmm. things for them. But their power users who know how to get in and do it and get out. So you're going to have this hybrid mode for, I think, a very long time, maybe forever. You know, when you think about it, like when you walk up to a gate agent at an airport, many of them are still using green screens. Why? Well, because they've memorized all the F keys, hotkeys, shift things, tabbing. Like they are super fast. Mm-hmm. If you switch that to a mouse, it would slow them down. Right? Yeah. Now, that isn't to say that they're not going to be revolutionized. But I think speed, you know, efficiencies of usage, I think you need to look at what solution fits which was mild. Now, the bigger question is, are you going to walk up to a gate and not have no agent? Are you just going to have AI and an automate? Yeah, maybe. Hmm. Probably on Southwest first, but maybe. So, maybe that's the way it works. Like someone like a Southwest or, you know, obviously some of the low-cost carriers like Ryanair in Europe, maybe that's the way it works. I would not be shocked. But still, if you want like British Airways or United, you're going to have a human-led experience. You know, so we'll see. We'll see. It'll be interesting. So,
great. I wanted to change gears a little bit, and it would be definitely, having you as a super experienced entrepreneur, I have to ask you some questions from entrepreneurship perspective, and people in the SaaS world expect me to ask those questions.
Yeah, sure.
You know, being someone who has raised over $300 million for Pendo, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
You will be one of the not so many qualified people that really can answer, you know, some of these questions for many entrepreneurs who might be at the position that they just wanted to raise money, or maybe they haven't started to raise a little bit of money and they wanted to know from your perspective, if you wanted to start your next venture after Pendo at one point, what would you do that would be different from what you have done? What kind of, you know, advice you would have for these entrepreneurs to say, if it's your first venture, do it this way. But if it's, you know, the third or fourth venture, then the equation may change a little bit. And I would advise you to do it differently. Or maybe there's no such a thing. Maybe you would do exactly the same thing every single time that you start a company.
Oh, I think that would obviously be a mistake. I mean, you know, I think the obvious thing, which really does tie to our last conversation. I mean, obviously we would be using AI more heavily. I think there's usually sort of conventional wisdom where you raise a round of capital and go out and hire a bunch of people. Like, I don't know you do that. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think you could build a business much more capital efficient. You know, I would probably raise a lot less capital if I started another business. Mm-hmm. I'd probably be much more judicious about where I spend it. Mm-hmm. I'd be trying to employ digital workers more. I'd be trying to be more efficient from day one. And I think that's an interesting model because I do wonder, like, so for example, we're applying, you know, some of these AI coding tools like the Cursors and the Windsurfs and all those cool solutions, GitHub Copilots to we have a large legacy code base. Mm-hmm. We're not seeing like huge results yet from leveraging those technologies. And it also, like, I mean, it's a scaled code base. It has to, you know, support lots of data, blah, 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 security. But if I'm starting from scratch, I may, you know, if you're going AI generated from day one, I wonder if then AI maintaining it will actually be an easier, long-term, more viable, you know, architecture. I think that's an interesting question. I think the way you can prototype and get feedback from customers, like, we had to wait to have an application in front of customers people could click. You don't have to wait anymore. You can start getting feedback almost instantly on what you're doing. So I think those are like, yeah, I mean, changing a company today, like a really one today, like it's so different than what I would have done. I mean, like think about pricing and packaging. You know, you're really thinking about pricing and packaging on outcomes. Like, what outcomes is our software providing for customers versus like, hey, people buy this, it's roughly this much per seat. I think you're going to be thinking differently about things like that. So I think you know, you've seen these stories of companies growing to $100 million in ARR on 30 employees. That's inspiring to me. That's inspiring. So I think, look, at Pendo, at our scale, we started talking about efficiency as a business like in 2022, a few years ago. And it also coincided with the end of the ZERP, zero interest rate days, and obviously a switch towards more. I hadn't mentioned the word in a town hall until 2022, probably. Now, look, it's probably a little bit of an exaggeration. We're not cavalier operators. We know what we're doing. I'm not saying like just went around frivolously spent money. That is not the case. Yeah. So I don't want people, entrepreneurs, to think that. However, focus was all growth, and we did push to grow very, very aggressively, and we didn't talk a lot internally about it. I think starting day one today, you would immediately talk about it. You'd be able to talk about it. It would be part of the ethos in our culture day one. You wouldn't have to build it in, just be there. That's a massive difference in how you're running a company and a startup. So I think that to me is one of the biggest differences that we have today. And look, I think, you know, think about it. You know, this is the third company I started. You know, first company, you had all this infrastructure we had to build. You know, we had, you know, I mean, my first company was desktop solutions. We, you know, had to print things on CDs and DVDs and ship software. Right? Well, obviously, cloud gets rid of all that. So second company I started was fully cloud-based. But this is pre-hyperscalers, so we're like managing servers and things in racks and dealing with uptime. And like, so like, okay, well, I didn't worry at all about distribution. Like distribution was there, but I had to worry about managing servers, right? And fast forward to Pendo, I start. One, we have like co-working spaces, but I need no real estate. I just rent a little bit, and they have all the internet and coffee. I can host everything at AWS or Google or Azure. Like that's all like taken care of me, you know, now. I mean, super different days, right? Now you have all that, plus you have like large language models, you have digital work, you have like a whole other set of things. You're now, the problems are the same if you're an entrepreneur. What problems are you solving? What are the traditional ways to do it? How is your way 10x better? Like getting the product market fit, there is no magic to it. I don't care what tools you have in your toolbox. It's the same problem.
Right.
Same problem for all of us. And you're going to see just as much, if not more, entrepreneurial innovation. They just get more stuff, which will help enable them to unlock growth faster. But you still need to do the fundamentals. So.
Yeah, and that's a very important matter you just mentioned, that, you know, there will be more companies that employing AI rather than just adding more employees, and that adds to their efficiency, maybe that accelerates the growth, you know, all of those. And that changes the way maybe some of these applications are being built. And AI agents are not there yet to write the whole software for you, but they are accelerating, they are helping you. Maybe for a brand new company, I met a gentleman yesterday that showed me how fast he prototypes and creates POCs using AI. And he used to be a product manager at Facebook, and he just was comparing the way he did 10 years ago versus he does now, that in a much smaller company, he's doing a few things all together by himself rather than having a team doing that, because he can, because of those AI tools around him, empowers him. And he said, the problem with bigger team that I had was most of my time had to be spent on communication and bring them up to speed. And now with kind of more compact team, I save a lot of time and we can move faster. And that saves me 90% of my time that had to be used for communicating with every single person around me to be on the same page.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I think that's pretty accurate. But I'll tell you another thing, though, which is probably worth mentioning to the entrepreneurs out there. And because I see this all the time. Yes, what you said, product development, building, prototyping, it's getting better and better every single day with AI tools. And it's really awesome. It's an unlock. This is one of the biggest cautionary tales in any startup situation, is a lot of startups think it's all about the product and all about the tech, and the tech and the product are very, very important. However, if your market is selling to larger enterprises, you will still very likely, certainly today, probably in the next few years, have to build a go-to-market team. You have to hire a salesperson. Like, at some point, if you're doing enterprise sales, some human being at that company is making a decision. That human being isn't going to stake their career without talking to another human being. Mm-hmm. And because if someone says, yes, I need to buy this thing for $1 million, you're staking your career on that decision, right? So I think you're going to naturally want to like run a process and like check all your boxes and meet a bunch of people. Like, so that's going to require humans. And that's where I see a lot of startups like have challenges, because building a go-to-market is very different. And because a lot, you know, well, as you probably know, a lot of entrepreneurs are technical. They come from technical backgrounds. So the idea like sales is scary or different or different problem domain. And I do think building a go-to-market is still hard. Now you do have AI solutions. So the way you build it, it's going to be more efficient, different, et cetera, but you're still going to have to build something. And it's going to involve some humans. No question. So yeah.
But very relevant to the point that you just mentioned, about a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to a gentleman that is creating a company, and I asked him about what is number one criteria in your mind when you wanted to really think about different ideas, and which company, which idea do you want to really dedicate some years of your life to it, to grow it, to create it from nothing. And some people respond to that telling me that, oh, I will look at exit strategy first before even I start thinking about the idea. If I don't have a good exit strategy, I would not start the company. Some people may tell me that. Yeah, I mean, I hear so many variety of answers to that question when I ask entrepreneurs, what is number one thing you look at it when you want to start that you need to keep that? And some people tell me the end game is the most important part to me. But this gentleman 2 weeks ago told me something that was new to me. And he said, I wanted to start a company and my software company has to be sold, not the company, but the company I'm starting, the product has to be sold by AI agents. If that's not possible, I will not start this company. I'm dead determined that what I start, the software has to be sellable by AI agents. I am not going to hire any salesperson. And if the product cannot be sold by AI agent, I'm not going to really even go further and just, you know. So that's a very interesting way to look at it, that this is one of the criteria that he has in mind. This is a major criteria. What can I do? What can I build that is sellable by AI agents?
I mean, I look at that. Sounds like his mission. His mission is to create something that is sold by AI agents. He wants to disrupt the way people buy things. I think my guess is he's selling something in that general domain. I think that's admirable. I think it's a great vision. I like having a vision that's like, we're going to solve this really, really hard problem and transform business, transform society. I love that. Like, that's the best why. Like planning for an exit
before you start
actually creates boundaries around your company from day one. It just does. Mm-hmm. Like, whereas thinking about what are like some of the biggest problems in the world and how can we solve them? Like, that to me, much better place. And
to be clear, it's not their mission. I'm not asking about their mission. I'm asking about the criteria that they validate their business model, right? So two different things. I mean, their mission is their mission. But how do you validate if this business model is a solid one? How do you have a scorecard essentially for your business model? And people tell me that, you know, these are the top kind of brownie points that you get if you can really answer these kind of things. And again, this was not the mission for that guy. It was like, if I can create a business that I don't need to hire salespeople and, you know, that would give me a lot of leverage and I can scale fast. I don't need to really spend a lot of money and time on sales. But, you know, to your point that really sales and many things else the way we look at it, it might be different in the future. And if you want to start a company today, how you think about it differently, leveraging AI as much as you can. All of these are really very, very good points at this age.
Look, I like that he's pushing boundaries and envelopes. I think the question comes down if they how long is he going to give it? Like if it's not working. So if it is working, great, congratulations. If it doesn't work, how long does he give it before hiring a salesperson? Because what's the most important thing for the business? What's the most important thing? Is this constraint that he doesn't want to hire someone,
Adding
or
paid customers,
is it some other mission or opportunity? Right? I think every business needs to step back and say, what's the most important thing? What's the most important thing? And I'll be honest, what's the most important thing? I mean, we care a lot about how our products help transform our customers, and we focus a lot on that. I think on our go-to-market, yes, we need to go to market efficiently. Yes, we need to create a great customer experience. Actually, the customer experience is far more important. It's one of our core values. The core value around maniacal focus on the customer. If I can maniacally focus on them while doing it via AI, of course I'll do it. But the most important thing is maniacally focusing on them, not using AI. And being a customer-oriented, or something that we felt from day one was core to who we are as a business. And it's been a value since day one. So that's how I force rank prioritize. And one day, I bet you, and we just rolled out a new agent for support, this week. I don't think it's maniacally good yet. But my guess is we're gonna iterate on it until it is. And when it is, it's I'm excited for it. That's the bar. And that's kind of how I think about it.
No, I can't see it. With autonomous cars, I couldn't trust them,
You
driving the
don't?
car 3 years ago, and now I trust them.
I mean, look, it's scary. It's scary. I think what's scary about it is they get so good, they actually take your hand off the wheel. You start, and then what if you do need to put your hand on the wheel because something happens? That's kind of the scary part. But they're incredibly good, and whether it's taking a Waymo. One of the cities Waymo's in, which is a very, very good experience, or I've Tesla with full self-driving. It's very, very good. I think these are good
The progress is
experiences.
there, so you can see the
100%.
progress very well. Great. And again, thank you very much. It was great discussion having you here, and I would like to ask you also to share with us a book that you may recommend.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. I already recommended one, so that was a free recommendation earlier. Look, I'm gonna go with The Hard Thing About Hard Things. Is a Ben Horowitz book, pretty classic. Most of you should have hopefully already read it. It's one of the few books that you go back and reread a bunch of times. I think it's so many good nuggets in there, and that, by the way, that are true and. The old era, the SaaS era, and the AI era. I think these are truisms that are very helpful. It's helpful in the good times and the bad times. So I'd recommend it.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure speaking with you, Todd.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armon Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to sasscale.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.